everyone, and welcome to the Dribble Podcast, your home of basketball in WA, with an inside look at the Perth Wildcats, Perth Lynx, and WA basketball throughout the 2021-22 seasons. My name is Craig O'Donoghue from the West Australian newspaper, and throughout this year, I'll be joined by a host of guests to provide you with as much insight and entertainment as your basketball brain can handle. In this episode, we'll be joined by three-time NBL MVP and Perth Wildcats superstar Bryce Cotton as he prepares for his 150th game. Plus, Perth Lynx captain Darcy Garbin will talk us through her brilliant start to the season and what the hell the Australian Opals intend to do when they get to Serbia after the debacle that was Novak Djokovic this week. But first, what an uncharacteristic few days it's been for the WA basketball teams. The Wildcats were 28 points down during the second quarter against Adelaide on Tuesday, and coach Scott Morrison wasn't about to think COVID-19 cost his team victory, given they were 18 points down in their previous match before fighting back to win. And when you talk about weird, Perth Lynx are still trying to work out how they went from smashing Canberra to going 11 from 19 at the free throw line and losing to Melbourne by 3 points. It will be intriguing to watch both teams' next matches, given teams that are as talented as them rarely produce back-to-back poor performances. The Wildcats have been fantastic at giving us an insight into their season on the Dribble Podcast this year, and there is no better man to take us into the camp today than this bloke.
Bryce Cotton from a long way out. Bottom of the net only.
A little showtime. Cotton to the rack.
He continues to amaze. It's your time, Bryce Cotton.
He's hit 7 threes. He has 45 points. And Perth have the title.
Yes, he is the best player in the NBL. Bryce Cotton, welcome to the Dribble Podcast.
Hey, how you doing? Glad to be here.
Now, you got back to Hobart about half an hour ago. It's Wednesday morning, Perth time. How's it been? It's obviously been a whirlwind couple of hours.
Yeah, it definitely has. We woke up super early. Obviously, our hotel was connected to the airport, so we got straight there and then, yeah, hit the ground running, landed, grabbed our stuff, just walked into the hotel probably 10 minutes ago, and now I'm talking to you.
So what's been the reaction from the team when you look back at last night?
I think just finding a common theme that we start the games off sluggish and then we pick it up, but that's not going to cut it because obviously, you know, teams are very talented in this league, so you can't just kind of turn the switch on and off. But we feel if we can play a consistent 40 minutes or maybe even 38 minutes, because I guess no team plays a perfect game, we'll be a lot better off if we can fix that. But first quarters are going to be key for us.
Is there anything that jumps off the page at you personally, given you're always out there at the start? Can you reflect on anything that just stands out to you?
No, not really. It's just overall, like I said, but just having slow starts, it's hard to, I guess, come back from that, especially when you're playing on the road. So maybe you have a little bit of a home court advantage, and I say that in quotations. Like if you get off to a slow start at home, maybe it's not as detrimental, but when you're playing on the road, you know, that's a backbreaker.
So we used to hear Trev always say the word synergy. He mentioned it all the time throughout his time here. And I look at the starting five and go, there's been injuries to Michael Frazier and Matt Hodgson and Todd Blanchfield and Mitch Norton. And Luke Travers didn't travel last night. In the last five games, you've had four different starting combinations. So you've got a new group of players, new coach, new game plan. With these sorts of changes, is it tough to mesh when you're trying to work out what everyone actually does and what everyone's specific roles are, either defensively or when you get the ball?
I mean, it's just like anything else. With every season, you know, you have your highs and lows, but it's still very early in the year. And, yeah, we're still learning things, but I think there's a lot of areas where we've kind of gelled, I guess, synergy-wise. But there's other areas where we need to pick up on it. And I don't think it's really the time to hit the panic button. But I reckon with us having, two more games within the next week, that'll be good for us to really get these games out so we get our reps in and gives us a better chance to get back in sync with one another.
It's been interesting watching you and Vic. You two clearly have a really good relationship. Some of your passes at the absolute last second, you point the fingers, they get over there and run. You charge towards the basket and then flick it out to him. Like, it feels like you two have got a really good working relationship.
Yeah, definitely. I think we still got a lot more ways to go to improve, but yeah, so far so good. But as long as we can find a way to get some wins coming up on our schedule on the road, because I think that'll be great for our team's mental. You know, if you want to compete for a championship, we've always believed good teams have to win on the road. So with us being out here, we're going to have to rack up some W's and prove to ourselves we're the same team, whether we're playing in Perth or whether we're playing elsewhere.
It's been a really interesting couple of weeks. We're watching athletes throughout the whole country playing in all the different sports when they're returning from COVID. We're still learning what it does to your body and especially what it does to an athlete's body. And we saw Adelaide rest a lot of guys last night, not give them too many minutes. We saw you guys have to put everyone out there and you're off the court. Vic was off the court within 3 minutes and that sort of never happens. But athletically, what does it do to your body? Once you've had COVID, what have you noticed is the biggest change to you from an athletic point of view when you're trying to get back onto court?
Honestly, I'm not quite sure. Like, I'm not going to make any excuses about it, but the only thing I would say, which I don't even know if it's COVID, it's just probably human nature. Like, if you are in isolation, you're not doing much, you know, your wind is probably the one thing that'll take a toll on you. But other than that, athletically, you feel like yourself, you just might get a little bit tired, I guess, quicker than normal. But other than that, I can't speak for anybody else, but I feel like my body felt normal. It's just, yeah, getting your wind back.
That makes sense, given it impacts on your lungs, doesn't it? So I suppose that's something that all athletes and all people around the whole country are going to have to put up with if you want to play sport after you've had COVID. This week is your 150th game. There's only 22 players who have played 150 games for the club, which is a strong indication of how transient basketball can be. When you look back on the last 5 years, was there a moment where you went, this feels like home now. This is my club. This is where I'm going to be playing for a long time.
Before I answer that, I just wanted to say with the COVID thing, like, I don't think the COVID is a direct, I guess, relation to feeling winded. It's just, even if you don't have COVID and you're not playing or practicing for X amount of days, like, you'll be tired. So, I just wanted to clear that up. I wasn't blaming me having COVID as a response of being tired. It's just, we didn't have the normal schedule, but with the 150th, I would say no. I said before, like, I had no idea I was going to be playing here year in and year out when I first got here. But I think that's kind of what's been beautiful about my journey here, is just never looking too far ahead into the future and taking things as they are in the moment and just doing the best I can with the moments that I have. And when I look back at, 149 games that I've played so far, it's been some pretty amazing memories. It's flown by, I'll tell you that. But as grateful as I am to have some of the memories already in my 5 seasons, I'm looking forward to trying to create many more.
So one of the most enthralling parts, I reckon, about your success is that you weren't a superstar at high school level and it wasn't like colleges were throwing offers at you left, right and centre. You've had to bust your butt for most of your life to get noticed. How much has that contributed to your drive and your success now?
It's contributed completely to my drive because I know, I was doubted at every level, and if Providence would have never offered me a scholarship, I'd still be in Tucson right now. And that's something that I've never taken for granted. And the fact that I've been blessed and lucky enough to kind of keep going in my journey. And I look back at, you know, where I started and how hard it was for me to advance to every level. I just always want to push myself to make sure I make this ride go as long as it can, because I don't want to come this far just to get complacent and then kind of kick my feet up.
So do you enjoy feeling uncomfortable? Do you put yourself into positions where you're going to feel uncomfortable by changing the way you play or changing the way you train or doing something that reminds you of what it was like when it was really, really hard for you to be noticed?
The mentality, honestly, it's never really left. I think kind of the notoriety I've gotten in this league, it's been very, very new for me, and I've never experienced anything like that before in my life. So I usually don't pay too much attention to it because my grandpa used to say, if you start reading your press clippings and all that stuff, reading things in the newspaper and all that, you'll get a big head and you'll lose your drive. So I just kind of remind myself of, okay, yeah, maybe I'm respected a little bit out here in Australia basketball wise, but I can't remember. I mean, I can't forget the journey and what it was like when I first started. So it's like, just because you've gotten to this point, you know, it's my beginning, I guess, that continues to drive me, not the success that I'm having now, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. So take us back to Tucson, Arizona as a kid. What was your growing up like? Because we all look at you as we say, the superstar now, but your life has been very different. What was it like growing up and trying to make your way and the levels that you were playing at as a teenager?
I mean, long story short, of the people that was playing basketball in Tucson that looked like they could make it to the Division I level. I wasn't one of those people that was probably one of the first names they'd bring up. Like, oh yeah, this guy's got a chance of going to college, especially like when we all first got to high school, like maybe around grade 9. Nobody was thinking me. There were so many other names that they put ahead of me. But I just think that belief in myself helped me, continued to push me. And looking back, I think it was a blessing in disguise, never being told how good I was growing up by, I guess, the basketball people in Tucson. So it just kind of drove me and made me want to push myself to be better and better. And who knows, maybe if people were giving me my flowers and telling me how good I was back then, maybe I wouldn't have worked as hard. So it probably ended up being a blessing in disguise.
Basketball's in a really interesting phase for players around the globe, I reckon, at the moment, given the impact COVID has had on the NBA. And there's been plenty of talks in recent weeks about which NBL players could possibly get a 10-day contract in the NBA. Your name's constantly thrown around. We've seen you reject a 10-day deal in the past at Wildcats. We've seen you accept 10-day deals before you got to Perth. Have you been approached this season? Has there been any talk about that within your management group?
No, haven't talked about it at all. And I think with COVID, I think it's very different because just traveling to get back to America and all that, I'm not quite sure how that would work out. And considering how guys drop like flies in the NBA now with COVID, they probably want somebody that's easily accessible. So I don't know how likely that would be for a player from the NBL. I'm sure it's possible, but I just don't know how likely that would be given the COVID circumstances.
Is it available to players contractually? Like, you've all got NBA out clauses. Do they include 10-day out clauses, or does it just have to be a real contract that most players would have written in, do you think?
I mean, a 10-day is still a real contract, so I would imagine. But I don't think everybody's contract is universal. Everybody has different stuff. But I would imagine if somebody has a 10-day, they would have a right to accept it if they wanted to.
The 10-day deals are, I reckon, a really interesting scenario for athletes with their lives away from the court. So we saw Scotty Hobson earn a deal for about $100,000 and he played one game. Cam Oliver got two games at Atlanta with his 10 days. Other players have turned 10 days into longer deals over time. When you offered something, whether you're now or whether you're 5 years ago or 6 years ago when you got your initial options, what do you have to think about when you're moving across either the country or you're moving across the world for 10 days?
I mean, you don't make it something that's more than what it is. You go in there, control what you can control, and just know, like, whatever opportunities you're given, you do the best you can, and whatever happens, happens. I think if you kind of brainstorm and look too far ahead, you kind of overthink things and you end up not playing your best, giving yourself the best shot to make the most out of your opportunity. So I guess in those situations where the pressure is so high, in theory, you have to have the mindset, less is more. if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's interesting. We always talk about you as an NBA. Well, it's why you're not in the NBA, and everyone else doesn't. I'm sure you get sick of it. But how conscious have you been over the years of wanting to spend the prime years of your basketball in a place where you're going to be on the court playing and having an impact rather than necessarily not enjoying the sort of career that you want to have?
Yeah, I've been, I would say, the last maybe probably three years or so, just kind of in the moment and just always focusing on controlling what I can control. So probably my first year or two outside the NBA, I was very bothered by it because I didn't understand why I wasn't in there anymore. I didn't feel like I played myself out of the position, but looking at it now in hindsight, it's an immature way to perceive that situation, because in life, sometimes things aren't always going to make sense and you don't have control over everything. So there's no need in, you know, worrying yourself to death. So now I just have the approach of, you know, I'm in Australia. I love it out here and I'm playing with a team that utilizes me to the best of my abilities, and I don't take it for granted, and I do all I can to be the best player I can be. And that's where my focus is at, because that's what I can control. Anything else is out of sight, out of mind, and that's done wonders for me mentally in regards with the whole NBA thing.
And you've said, as you've said to me many times, you're living in a country where there's sun, where there's no bombs, and where everyone speaks English, and it's a hell of a lot more fun than going somewhere where those aren't the scenarios. Now, if we look at the Dribble Podcast MVP votes from Tuesday night, I have given one vote to the man we're talking to, Bryce Cotton, two votes to Michael Frazier II, and three votes to Vic Law for his 16 points and 14 rebounds. If we talk about life off the court, Bryce, Scott Morrison has been constantly telling us how much he's been getting into the cricket, and he's been betting on Big Bash games, which shows that he's an actual Aussie. Now, you had your first Aussie rules football experience this year, going to a game in July, and you went to the grand final. Talk to me about the Australian football experience you had this year, and how you're settling back into the different sports now that you are being played over here.
I mean, yeah, the sports are different, I would say, but I think for me, to my surprise, I never thought I would ever actually get into footy. But I actually love it, and I can't wait for the season to come back around, because, like, I actually know what's going on. So that's pretty fun. And some of my teammates get a crack up when I talk about some of the players on different teams. Like, they're just surprised at how much I know that game. So I'm enjoying that, but I think I'm going to stop while I'm ahead. I don't think I'll ever understand cricket, so I'll just stick to my footy.
Your uncle actually played NFL a few games back in the 80s where he played. So you've played a lot of sports. Do you reckon footy would have been one that you would have been okay at if you had grown up over here?
Yeah, I would have given it a shot for sure, because, I mean, I love to play any sport pretty much growing up. So I definitely would have given it a shot for sure if I grew up in Australia, I'm sure.
It's been an interesting couple of days. When you look at the different things that have been happening around the country, there was a tsunami warning in Hobart, and you guys are staying on the water. You're not a fan of the beach, really, and especially the concept of sharks over here. When you heard tsunami coming out from the Hobart weather forecast, what did you think?
You know, that's something I've always thought about, because when I look at Australia, like, geographically, I always envision it as like a big island. And that's something that has always crossed my mind, but I've never actually said to anybody. So when I heard about that warning, I was just like, oh, my God. But, yeah, there's nothing really I can do. Just hope for the best.
It is quite a bizarre tale. We had Thomas Ajay on the podcast this week, and you two have built up a bit of a relationship with Sneakerland and a lot of the different events that you guys have been at together. Every time I see you appear on different forms of social media, there's a different pair of shoes floating around with you. How many pairs of shoes have you currently got floating around in your house, do you reckon?
I actually don't have that many shoes. Like, I have a few pairs, maybe, I don't know, let's say maybe eight or nine. That's not that many compared to some of my friends, so I think I'm doing all right.
You must be moving a fair few on then, not keeping them all the entire time. Now, you got your 30th birthday later this year. Our border opens up soon. You haven't been home for so damn long. Like, have you already got plans in your place to get back to the US and be able to see your family and celebrate with them later this year?
I'm really looking forward to it. I think the fact that we're just kind of in the beginning of the season gives me so much hope for this time to fly by in between now and when I'm able to go home. Because by the time the season's done, hopefully, you know, we're able to go pretty far into the year this year. And whenever that's done, it's like, okay, I can finally see my family after what will be 3 years by the time the season's done. So it's a whole lot that I have to look forward to. So it's going to be a pretty adventurous year for me.
The majority of your family wouldn't even met your daughter, would they?
None of them except my mom.
That's amazing to think. And she'll be about three by the end of this year, won't she?
Yeah, so she'll be 2.5 by the time she meets pretty much everybody out there.
It's amazing. It just shows how difficult life has been for someone who's from a different country, given we've been locked off over here throughout the entire pandemic. So hopefully we open up well and you can get over there, which would be fantastic. Now, we have a segment on the Dribble podcast called This or That. You can't sit on the fence. You need to give a genuine answer to people. And the question here is advice to young players. We've seen how much your game has developed over the years, despite being a superstar in so many different ways. So when you have one significant scoring strength, do you reckon it's better to add another scoring strength straight away, or in an off-season, prioritise something different like your passing or your rebounding or your defence? What should be a focus for a young player when they're trying to round out their game?
I mean, depending on how young they are, the answer changes. But if you're like 14, 15, maybe 16, I would say just make your strength stronger. Because once you get to around that age, whatever you're good at, whatever style of play that you have as a player, that's probably who you're going to be for as long as you play. So there's no need in trying to reinvent yourself. So I'm not saying you completely neglect the other sides of the game, but I would say your major focus should be just strengthening your strengths and then, yeah, fine tuning some of the other things. But it's all about making your strengths stronger, because at the professional level, if that's where you desire to play, most players, you can specifically say what they're good at. And very rarely do you have players that are just kind of good at everything. So that kind of gives you a better chance to stand out where a team could feel like maybe they could use you in the future, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. And that's perfect advice for anyone who's coming through the ranks and wanting to make yourself better. Listen to the man who is the best player in this country. Look, Bryce, thank you very much for joining us. Really appreciate it. Wildcats' next match will be game number 154, Bryce. It's at 5 p.m. Perth time on Saturday against Illawarra. We hope the team bounces back for you and gives you a milestone to remember.
Oh, yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Thank you again for having me on. And, yeah, I still can't believe I got my 150th. But, yeah, this will be exciting.
Brilliant. Thank you very much, Bryce.
All right, take care.
And now it's time to enter the lair with this lady.
Garvin, straight on three. That's the response they needed. Garvin again, same spot. This time she drains it. 77 apiece.
7 seconds to play. The ball's with Emsery. Finds Garvin for the win. Oh. Nancy Garvin!
Yes, she is the Perth Lynx captain, a dual WNBL championship winner, an Asia Cup gold medalist, and now a member of Australia's 2022 World Cup squad. Darcy Garvin, welcome to the Dribble podcast.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So we're recording this in two parts this week, and it's now 1 p.m. on Tuesday, and you've just been announced as part of the 16-player squad for the World Cup qualifiers. They'll be played in Sydney later this year. So to get the opportunity now, it must be a great honour.
Yeah, anytime you get named in the squad to represent your country and the opportunity to put the green and gold on it, it's an absolute honour. I mean, for me, it's the highest privilege in our sport. So, yeah, it's just you're immensely proud of myself and, you know, can't wait to get to camp. And it's always a competitive environment. You're competing against the best players in the country. So, yeah, just going and hoping I can put my best foot forward for selection for that team to go overseas in February.
So it's a really interesting squad when we look at it. So Lynx star Sammy Whitcomb has been selected as the sole naturalised or dual citizen ahead of Leilani Mitchell, which is great for her. Abby Bishop and Annalie Maley have come into the 16 despite not being named in the initial 24 squad. And then you've got Shyla Hill, Maddie Rocky and Beck Cole, who are all in contention despite not being at the Olympics or Asia Cup. So it's such a different squad to what we're accustomed to. What's Sandy Brondello told you all about how she's going to build this team to be ready for that World Cup later this year?
Yeah, it's an exciting group, and it's a group that hasn't probably had a whole lot of time together, and we've got some new players making their debut. So, I think it is just, I know it's 2022 and it's 2 years later, we're still dealing with COVID and stuff, but it's our ability to be adaptable and just, you know, we get into camp and we don't have much time together. So it's being flexible, willing to learn, and then just applying that on the fly and hopefully, you know, making sure when we're over there that we can make adjustments on the go. So, it's exciting. It's a very exciting time.
So what becomes your priority here to get from 16 into the 12? What do you have to do at camp, do you feel, and in the next couple of games to really tell Sandy, you know, I want to be in this team, I deserve my spot?
I think one of the things that helps me with my, contention in that Opals team is my defensive abilities to, be versatile, especially in the on-ball screens, the ability to switch onto smaller players. I think being able to stretch the floor and shoot the three for a big, is something that I can do quite well. And I've been pretty happy with how I've been doing that at the moment in the Dumbbell. So just keeping that, at the moment, and just staying in a really good shape, and having that Opals toughness when we're out there on the floor.
It's quite extraordinary to think that the World Cup qualifiers are going to be in Serbia, given we've just sent Novak Djokovic packing back there. You'll be the first Australian team to enter Serbia since that has occurred. What's the discussions been like within the group about that issue?
Yeah, it's funny. I haven't really been paying a whole lot of attention. We are in a bit of a bubble at the moment, just focusing on the WNBL. So I have seen things in the media about it. But, we're going to be going into Serbia and we're going to be following all the recommendations and guidelines and protocols by their government. So, it wasn't probably until the other day that someone kind of mentioned that to me. I haven't really been following along too much with the tennis, just given our situation with our games, every second day at the moment. But, yeah, I'm sure there's not going to be any dramas there.
The Serbian president has actually come out and said, "We will not mistreat them." It was one of his quotes. And another one was, "We will show them that we are better than the Australian government." So it's clear that they're trying to lay a fairly stable background for you to enter. But you just never know about what a crowd's going to be like. Would that be at all the biggest concern if you have any issues at all, that what the crowd are going to treat you as?
I don't think so. I mean, there's a reason that's being hosted in Serbia. They are a great sporting nation, and I'm sure they're going to be great hosts. So, the Opals have played, World Cup in Spain against Spain and had the crowd, on them there. And I'm sure, if anything, the girls will just embrace, the crowd and what they're going to be like.
The interesting part about this is that you don't even have to go because you've already qualified as a nation because the World Cup will be held here. But it's really important for this team to start playing together. So has that made it a lot easier, do you think, for everyone to commit to going, given that they know that you haven't got a lot of experience and it's so important to build this camaraderie and teamwork for when you get this tournament later on in the year?
I mean, maybe it takes off a little bit of pressure knowing that we have already qualified, but, the Opals program has very high standards and we go into every tournament with the expectation that we're going to put our best foot forward for every game and we're going after every game to win. So, while there's no pressure to qualify, I think there is pressure to, make sure we are playing well and getting those connections on the floor, as we do have a limited time leading up to the World Cup.
It's been a fair week for the Garvin household. Your sister Sophie's part of the Australian Diamonds that smashed New Zealand on Sunday and South Africa on Monday. And by the time this podcast is uploaded, hopefully we've obliterated England as well. Like, how's it been watching her?
Yeah, I have to admit, I haven't been getting up at 1 a.m. and 3 a.m. I have been watching the replay just because I need my sleep around our games. But I'm extremely proud of Sophie. I mean, she took a massive leap leaving Perth and moving to Sydney at a pretty young age, and her career's absolutely blossomed. And you can see she didn't get on in that first game, but that second game she made the absolute most of her opportunity and played amazing. And I think it's only, upwards for her in that Diamonds program. Yeah, like I said, I just couldn't be prouder of her and the way that she's handled herself as a professional athlete.
What is it about your family? Like, we see a lot of families which have players in the same sport and they go on to have a lot of success. It's rare to look at people who are representing their country in different sports altogether. You've got to have a lot of talent coming through the system and a lot of family talent as well as you're growing up. What was it like for you two?
I guess our parents were just always super supportive. We were never probably pushed into doing anything, but they were always there encouraging us. And we were very fortunate that they were happy to drive us around and pay for tournaments and pay for us to play and try whatever we wanted to. So super grateful. We did grow up in the country and we were about 7 hours from Perth. So if it wasn't for Mum driving us down to Perth every second weekend so we could try out for a state team or go to a camp, I don't think we would be where we are today. So super grateful. And like I said, they never really forced us to do anything. It was always, as long as we wanted to do it, they were happy to take us. And I think, you know, just their values of hard work and having a good work ethic have rubbed off on us. And I think that's kind of what got us to where we are today.
Am I right that your dad was about the only person in the grandstands a few years back in India when you were playing in, was it an Asia Cup where you're in India? And obviously weren't any big crowds for Australia versus Kazakhstan or anything like that. But he travelled all the way over there and was making the most noise.
Yeah, my dad, when we were younger, probably worked very hard and was working a lot and probably didn't travel as much overseas as some other people. So he's had a lot of opportunities with both Sophie and I playing internationally. He's taken the opportunity to follow us around a little bit. So, yeah, he came to India and he was one of the only Aussie supporters in the crowd, but he loved it. And, you know, him and Mum have been to a few different tournaments and, it's really nice for them, I guess, that they can have a little bit of a holiday and get to follow us around and watch some sport.
The irony about you moving back to WA was that it was meant to be that you would come back from Townsville and have some success over here playing in front of family and friends, and you had a full season last year stuck back in Queensland and now you're stuck in Ballarat. You must be counting the days until you can actually play in front of them.
Yeah, 100%. I moved home with the intentions to win some games on our home floor. We spent last year in Townsville and then now we've been away. I purchased a house in October 2020 and I think I have lived there for maybe 2 or 3 months altogether in terms of, like, if I added it all up. But I mean, it is what it is. We're all navigating through this COVID situation and we have to relocate and that's what it is. We can't let that affect us too much. Everyone's sort of in the same boat. We're just hoping that these borders open in February, we can get some home games and finish the season out on home, and hopefully we can make the top four and play some finals. So who knows? I mean, that's still months away, but I'm really fingers crossed hoping that it all goes to plan.
Really big season for you personally so far, not just on the court but off the court by being named as the Lynx captain. We had a story the other day quoting Ryan Petrick, your coach, saying that he's not sure how comfortable he would feel being the captain of this team given it's so good. It's so many stars in there that it's hard to talk to a group like that at times. But how have you handled being the captain of such an elite group right now?
Yeah, I did see that. And I mean, you know what? Everyone in this team is a leader in their own right. We have three WNBA players, so they understand what it's like to be a professional. We've got girls from the Opal squad. So everyone kind of takes it on themselves to make sure they're doing the right thing. And it's not like I have to have too many conversations where I'm pulling people up. Everyone knows that we're here to do a job and everyone's committed and buying into that. But it has been, you know, a massive learning curve for me. I'm still only 27, which I feel a little bit young sometimes to think that I'm captaining the team. But, yeah, it's been a massive learning curve.
So you've been doing a lot of work with the state teams as well, the underage teams that have been going throughout the country trying to impress and show what they can do. So you've obviously got a strong leadership element to whether it's coaching or whether it's captaining. What sort of work have you done to harness that skill?
I'm not too sure necessarily if I've put any, like, too much conscious work into it. I guess it's something I've always kind of done. I've, you know, been in teams with some great leaders, so I think a lot of it is just kind of learning from them. When I was in Townsville, I was privileged to have Susie Bakovic as my captain and had vice captains like me, Amari and Michaela Cox, and then to learn from the likes of Katie Ebsery and the Opals girls, you have Jenna as your captain. I think it's just taking little bits from their leadership styles and trying to put it into your own. I do, like, as I'm getting older, making a more conscious effort to make sure, you know, I'm putting into work about, you know, different conversations I have and stuff like that. But it's definitely taking things from people I've played with and trying to, you know, make it my own.
So you look at other sports, and footy refers to them as captain's goals. And we've seen Australian Test captain Pat Cummins grabbing the ball to bowl at really important times during the Ashes as well. And your ability to step up when games have been on the line the past two seasons for the Lynx have been really significant. We heard some of that in the audio as you were coming in. So how much pride do you take in your ability to handle the high-pressure moments and say, give me the ball when the game's on the line?
Yeah, I don't know if that's too intentional. I look back at that game against Southside where I shot that three and think, thank God it went in, because I don't know if that was the right shot to take. But, yeah, I think I'm just super proud of the girls and representing our state, if anything. I mean, it is nice when those plays come off and you kind of do get that, you know, that it's a captain's game or captain's call or whatever it is when you make those shots. But I'm sure if I miss and you're on the other end of it, you're probably going to cough it as well.
So if we look at the Dribble Podcast MVP votes for the last week, and it's been fair to say there's been a bit going on because the Lynx have had three games. So if we go through them in order, and you're going to hear Darcy's name several times in this. In the Southside game, I've gone one vote Sammy Whitcomb, two votes Lauren Scherf, and three votes Marina Mabry. Then in the Canberra win, it was one vote to Darcy, two votes to Lauren Scherf, and three votes to Marina Mabry again. And then in the most recent clash against the Melbourne Boomers, it was one vote Alex Sharp, two votes Lauren Scherf, and three votes to our guest Darcy Garbin, which leaves Marina Mabry on nine votes, leading from Scherf on six and Darcy on five. Lots of names in there, Darcy, so plenty of talent in this squad. Must be really exciting to think about what you could potentially do this season.
Yeah, exactly, and we've lost two games, one by 2 points and one by three, so it's about, you know, not getting too high or too low and just trusting that our system that we have in place is going to get us through this season. And like I said, we're only four games in. Some teams, we played Melbourne, that was their eighth or ninth game. So I'm super excited about the talent, the shooting that we have on the floor. I mean, it's not like we're throwing the ball to one person and relying on them to get us over the line. I think our ability across the floor is what makes us hard to guard.
What's it like when you're looking over at Marina Mabry basically shooting threes from half court and just doing it repeatedly this season, and you think, how do people manage to do that at times?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes I get caught watching Marina because I am in awe of her ability, but she puts in the work like everyone else. And, you know, she was in the, her and Jackie were in the gym this morning after our loss last night, getting up extra shots. So there's no, I mean, shouldn't act too surprised when those shots are going in, because she is in the gym putting in the work and making sure that when it comes to the game that she's ready to go.
The schedule has been quite remarkable, as you said. We've gone January 12, you beat Southside in Ballarat in overtime. January 13, you fly to Canberra. January 14, you beat Canberra. January 15, you fly back and drive to Ballarat. January 16 is a normal day. And then January 17, you lose to Melbourne. January 18 is today, which is a day off. And January 19 is tomorrow, and you play Canberra again. How's the body? How are you feeling after that sort of a schedule?
I mean, it's a lot less taxing on the body than the hub so far. Last year, I don't think anyone could be prepared for that. So, I mean, the older I get, the probably more I'm feeling it. But we've got, you know, physio available to us, massage, and I guess as professional athletes, we know all the right things to do to make sure that we are ready to turn around and play these back-to-back games.
What's the biggest focus when you do get an opportunity now to actually train, which would be hard, I would have thought, given that you're all in recovery mode? Are you able to focus on specific things from the team, or does it become an individual thing when you're on a day off, as you mentioned with Marina and Jackie out shooting today?
I guess it's an individual thing on how your body's feeling. Some people, you know, if we've got the day off, they might still want to go get shots up because they know that's what's going to get them right for the next game. In terms of team stuff, we watch a lot of film when we can't be on the court. The best way to learn is sort of by watching film from previous games and scouting in preparation for our next opponent. So when we do get on court as a team, though, we're definitely focusing in on what we can do as a team. But, you know, it's kind of up to every individual what they need to do on those days off to get ready.
Are you able to do much over there? Like, obviously, Ballarat isn't as hardcore in terms of COVID as what some parts of Australia are, but it's still out and about. What sort of living conditions are you going through at the moment to try to keep yourselves entertained but happy off the court also?
I mean, it is a little bit difficult. We are trying to reduce our risk of exposure to any sort of COVID at the moment here. So Victoria's obviously a bit of a hotspot in Melbourne, but being in country Ballarat, there's not that many cases, I guess. But we are just making sure we're not doing, you know, not sitting indoors at a restaurant or being indoors at places for too long where there's lots of people. So it's, you know, if we want to get takeaway food, it's making sure we're doing that. Or if we're sitting at a restaurant, we're sitting outside and we're making sure we're wearing masks when we can't social distance and stuff like that. So I think everyone in the league at the moment is just being conscious about how they can reduce their risk. And, you know, it's unfortunate those Melbourne girls, there's three teams in Melbourne, they've been in lockdown for the last 2 years, and all of a sudden, you know, the state's opening up and they've got these freedoms back. And then, you know, sort of the recommendations from the league have, you know, been to kind of reduce doing a lot of things. So I do feel for them, but unfortunately it's just the way it is at the moment. And if we want the season to go ahead and no more games to be cancelled due to COVID, we've kind of got to make sure we're doing the right thing.
There's been plenty of stuff bobbing up on social media about the group doing different things. It was, I think it was a Mexican day the other week and a painting day. Who's in charge of the social? Is it a social committee that you've got sitting there, or is there a social person who organises everything? Who's the one who's trying to keep everyone happy?
I think it's a bit of everyone. The two Emmas in the team organised to have Taco Tuesday the other week, and then I'm not sure who suggested the painting night the other night, but we're doing, you know, a few things when we can. And, you know, it's none of them's compulsory. If people don't want to come, they don't have to, but it is nice just to have a few little activities here and there. I know a lot of us watch, you know, the NBL, so we might all get together one night and watch the NBL. But it is just making sure that, you know, this is technically like a home environment. So, you know, if people want their time to themselves, they can have that. And then if people want to hang out, we can do that too.
I do hear you're heading to Sovereign Hill, a very famous place in Ballarat. And as a Kalgoorlie girl, you'll be talking up your prospects. So I thought of panning for gold and as one of the key parts of Sovereign Hill.
Yeah, I might be faking it until I make it, because I have no idea what I'm doing. But, yeah, I'm very excited. We're going to be panning for gold and making candy, apparently. So not too sure how much skills are required, but I'm excited that we get to go out. And, you know, the Victorian government's funded us being here, so it'll be nice to see a little bit of Victoria.
It's been a long time. I'm a Victorian myself. It's been a long time since I was at Sovereign Hill. I reckon I was 6 or 7, but I still remember the panning for gold. It's what everyone does when they go there, which is always a bit of fun. It's amazing how they, whether it's painted rocks they've actually got in there, I'm not really sure, but it always looks like you've always picked up something as you go home. Now we have a segment on the Dribble called This or That, where you can't sit on a fence, you have to give an actual answer. And the question for this week is, what's your advice to young players? If you have one significant scoring strength, once you get to the off-season, should you prioritise adding another scoring weapon or focus on a totally different other part of your game, like passing, rebounding or defence? What's the best thing to round out your game, do you feel?
I think you need to be, you know, if you want to make it to the next level, you have to have a little bit of everything. So if you're a great scorer, I think it's working on all of those things. Can you shoot the three? Can you get to the basket? What's your mid-range game like? But then I think you also need to, you know, there's no point in being able to score a heap of points if you can't play defense or you can't facilitate to your teammates. So having a nice rounded overall game is definitely what the off-season's for, working on those specific little skills.
Well, look, thank you very much, Darcy, for joining us. Really appreciate it. It's been a tough schedule for you so far, so to find some time for us in your day off is fantastic. Good luck in the upcoming games, and hopefully we'll see you in the Opals uniform next month.
No worries. Thank you so much for having me.
Remember, everyone, keep logging on to thewest.com.au for all your basketball news and pick up your copy of the West Australian newspaper. Thanks to Samantha Rogers and Brendan Underwood for their production work this week. Thanks to Bryce Cotton and Darcy Garvin for their time. And we'll be back next week for another episode of the Dribble Podcast. Woo!